Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 358 of Geek Town Radio. I am back this week with...
So, we meet again, Buzz Lightyear, for the last time.
Not today, sir.
Matt, how you doing?
I'm very good, David. How are you?
I'm good. Got a slightly different Buzz intro this morning.
Yeah, so the idea I kind of had for my intro was it's still Toy Story, but just rotate between, I think it's four different clips.
Yes.
So, yeah, very cool. But no, I'm doing good. In terms of stuff I've been doing, the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 beta just had its second weekend. It went through like early access PlayStation, then open to other people, and then it slowly just opened to like PC and Xbox and other places like that. I really, really liked it. They had, obviously, you know, limited game modes, limited weapons and stuff. It's just to, you know, get players to get used to the new feel of the game, which it does feel very, very different.
Okay.
So for those of you who don't know what this is, there are basically five Modern Warfare games now. There's, so all the way back in 2007, there was Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. That's the first one. Mm-hmm. Then a few years later, there was Modern Warfare 2, then Modern Warfare 3 after that. Then COD went through a bit of a weird cycle of making futuristic...
I vaguely remember that, yes.
...all running and all sorts of weird stuff, and then some other World War II games. Yeah, so that all happened. And then in 2019, they did what I would call a revival, because they kept certain canon things, because there was obviously the campaigns and things from the original three games. They revived the series and then brought back with Modern Warfare 19 with all new sort of like technology and all new sort of gameplay systems. And it was sort of like the big deal of bringing Modern Warfare back. That was great. And then they, you know, made some new leaps and stuff in technology. So then 3 years later, because after Vanguard and Cold War, those were the other two games, and obviously Warzone came out. Modern Warfare 2 is the actual sequel to Modern Warfare 19. Some people seem to think it's a remake of Modern Warfare 2. It's not a remake of Modern Warfare 2.
Right.
It will have certain classic guns and maps from Modern Warfare 2 because they're using classic things and new things, which is what they did with the previous game. So that's really cool. But yeah, it's interesting playing this game on PS5 because, again, with things like the adaptive triggers and haptic feedback, I say it feels like a new game because, well, it is a new game. They've sort of taken some of the technology that they put into Modern Warfare 19 and just advanced things a bit more. One interesting thing that they've done, obviously, because when you have a shooting game, people are going to have different opinions about, like, you know, weapons and systems and maps and game modes and things like that. But the one core thing, obviously, that you've got is the gunplay. You know, what does it feel like to shoot the guns, reload and slide and jump and, you know, your movement and your shooting, which is what I call sort of gunplay. And what they've done, Modern Warfare 19 was what I would call very sort of loose and very sort of fast and quick, which was the design of it. That was the whole sort of point of it. And you could do like slide canceling and all these sort of other like really fast things. And what they've done with this one is just add like a touch more of weight to it, not to the point where you feel like you're, you know, carrying loads of bags or something, but just that realistic little bit more of weight. And I feel like they've kind of got that perfect so far. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's going to be different with like what guns you've got, what equipment you've got, the attachments, things like that, because there's attachments you can get that will sort of increase your sprint to fire speed or your aiming speed and, you know, things like that. So again, when the full game comes out, we'll be able to sort of, if we have a gun and we want to change the way it operates and stuff, you can do that with attachments, because you can add, I think, like five different attachments. So there's always those options. There's been a few like community kind of complaints and things. One of the really odd complaints I've found through the beta.
It wouldn't be Call of Duty if there weren't some complaints.
Exactly. And what it kind of comes down to at the end of the day is Infinity Ward, who's the developer of the Modern Warfare series or all of those games, is obviously there's tons of different people playing this game. They've all got different play styles, different ways they want to play. people are going to agree and disagree on, you know, where the perk should be and how you can choose all that and, you know, all that type of stuff. But one kind of strange complaint I've seen is that, oh, the footsteps are too loud when you're running around. It's interesting how, like, I play this game. Obviously, I've got my certain way of playing the game tactically and things like that, because there's kind of a big difference between there is what I would call the headless chicken type of player.
Yeah.
And somebody like me, who I still tend to run around and things like that, you're going to be running around in the game. I tend to play a bit more tactically. Mm-hmm. And what certain players just want to do is look on the map for the red dots when people shoot, use dead silence, sprint head first without looking at anything over to that person and shoot them. And the problem with playing like that is if a sniper sees you or you run past somebody, they're going to see you and probably get you. And then you'll probably be annoyed about that. But that's been interesting as well. But the funny part about, like, the whole footsteps thing is everybody's footsteps are the same volume. So nobody's at a particular disadvantage with that. It's not as if the enemy will hear you louder than you're going to hear them.
Right.
Because everybody's foot. See, the thing is, because they put this technology into Modern Warfare 19, the emphasis on, like, 3D audio and footsteps and, like, tracking your enemy, which I find really, really fun to do.
Yeah.
Like, you hear somebody running above you or in the next room or downstairs too, depending on where you are.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you'll track that person. It's really, really fun to do. And you use different tactics, different equipment. It's great. But I think what they've done with this game, I don't feel like it's louder. I feel like it's clearer.
Right.
And I feel like it's clearer because, well, first of all, I'm on the next gen system, because I was playing the other game on PS4 and this is on PS5. And plus, you've got a game that's just been in development for 3 years, and you'd expect technology to be, you know, clearer and better and improved. So one way to do that with the audio is not necessarily make it louder, but make it clearer. In general, I really, really enjoyed this. I think the actual audio design itself, like the way the guns sound, the way that everything sounds, I think is really sort of top class. Once I got used to how the game felt to play, because it felt very weird at the start, because it wasn't what I was sort of used to. But once you sort of get what they were going with and everything, I really started to enjoy it. So, but the 2 weekends of the beta have gone, and the game's out on the 28th of October. So very much looking forward to playing that when it comes out.
Excellent.
I played a building game this week,
which is
not something you probably ever heard me say.
No, before. But I get why. I had actually looked at this game and hadn't bought it, but it did intrigue me. So what's it like?
It's called Disney Dreamlight Valley. It just came out very recently. It's only £25 on the PlayStation Store, which is very, very good. And if you've got Game Pass as well, which I don't, but some people might do, you can get it on Game Pass. I think that would apply to the PC Game Pass as well, probably.
We'd have to have a look, yes.
But you can get it on Game Pass for free, technically, with a subscription. I've only played about an hour of it. I just sort of got, like, started with it, and I streamed all of that, which was quite good. It was interesting for me because I get what the game was, like, trying to get me to do and stuff. You got to mine different things and find different equipment, because my first hour was kind of finding, like, the fishing rod and finding the pickaxe and finding the shovel, and, you know, that's obviously so that you can make stuff and plant things and water your garden and stuff like that. I met Goofy, which was fun. I met Scrooge McDuck, who initially I thought was somebody else, but we won't get into that. We won't get into my mistake there. Met the wizard, who's at the start of the game. But no, I've seen, like, some of the trailers and things like that. I'm mainly just kind of looking forward to walking around in my created sort of Disney world with these fun Disney characters, and hopefully eventually meeting Buzz and Woody. That'll be really fun.
Yes.
When that happens. I think they're adding, like, a specific story thing later on. There was a trailer that they released for that. I'm still going to be kind of learning how to play it and sort of what to do, and there's a ton of different mechanics, but so it's got a lot of promise. I quite like it so far. Little bit of that grind towards it, but I kind of expected that. You know, I'm spending 5-10 minutes sort of mining stuff and collecting things, but I like it so far. I think it's quite good. It's interesting for me to kind of go and play a building game, but I wouldn't be playing it if it wasn't sort of Disney themed. So
yeah,
that was pretty good. But yeah, the idea is, like, this land, which is called Dreamlight Valley, got kind of taken over by darkness, you know, that sort of thing. And you're not really summoned, but you've ended up there somehow. And your job is to kind of clean the place up and, you know, bring the light back to the valley, I think is the phrase. Because there's, like, a Disney castle in there and stuff, but it's covered with all these sort of dark vines and, you know, the darkness and stuff. So it's pretty interesting so far. Have you, like, seen any of it at all?
I've seen clips and bits and pieces. And it's sort of, obviously, it's one of the things, because it's on Steam as well. And it's one of the things that was recommended to me, because you know how much I like building games. And it was sort of intriguing, and I'm interested to sort of see if it is on Game Pass. I might go and download it, because I have got the PC Game Pass. But basically, you're wandering around a Disney world, but you can build stuff in it. It's described as a mix of life sim and an adventure game. So they're trying to cash in on the hugely popular Nintendo Switch, Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
So they're sort of trying to get in on that, I think, a little bit, along with sort of having an adventure game thing. They've done stuff like this before, haven't they, I think? They've done sort of things which have got all the characters in it and you've sort of, you know, you can meet them and things. So I might go and take a look at this and see what it's like. Graphically, it looks really good.
Yeah, so that's been quite fun. Last of Us Part 1 came out. We'll talk about the trailer for the show here shortly, I think, as well. Yeah, the new, well, I say new game, this is the remake of the 2013 game.
Yes.
So for those of you that kind of didn't know, obviously Last of Us 1 initially came out on PS3, which is funny to think about that, like how in the distance the PS3 is, because we've had like the 4 and 5, but that franchise started over there. And then the year later it got remastered for PS4. Basically what that was is because the PS3 was a bad system and the PS4 was out, they made a PS4 version because you have trouble porting PS3 games because they're awkward. So that was kind of why that happened. And then obviously nearly about like 10 years later or so, they made Part 2 and Left Behind in that time as well. So those games, what they wanted to do with this was essentially like take the technology that they used in Last of Us Part 2 and some newer technology as well, and kind of bring new life to the Last of Us Part 1 with this like really, really special story. So you've got, again, things like the haptic feedback, you've got the adaptive triggers with different things. They put in like the workbench from Part 2. They massively, massively upgraded the graphics as well. Even if you look at because they did like some shot by shot screenshot things, and they used the PS4 Pro version, and even in the PS4 Pro version as opposed to the PS5, because I think when they made Part 2 and then they made like these newer character models, they took some of those character models from like flashbacks and stuff and used them for Part 1. And also with characters that weren't in Part 2, they like made new character models for. And also like the interiors, and obviously there's a lot of bushes and things like that because nobody's been gardening anything for over 20 years. Yes. They like redid all that. They graphically redesigned sort of like the whole game, which took a bulk of the development. Because one area where they kind of were able to save time is on things like dialogue and writing the story, because that was already done a while ago. So they essentially just took all that and then upgraded sort of everything. I'll be doing like a full review possibly today, maybe later on, for the whole game. But I really, really like it. I did platinum it over the last week or so, because as Neil Druckmann and I think it's Matthew had directed this game. Neil directed the original too. And they said like this is what they look at as sort of the definitive way to play it, because there's now sort of three versions of it, but if you want sort of like the best way to play this game, it's with this version. So, and to answer the kind of question that goes around about Part 1 as to, okay, is this game worth $70? I don't think it's a simple yes or no. I think it depends on, have you played it before? What's your interest level? If you have played it before, do you want to go back and play it again? If you don't even like the series, then obviously don't bother. So, but it's sort of like, if you played it on PS3 or 4 and you really enjoyed the story and don't need to go back, then you kind of don't need this new version if you don't want it. So that's not really a sort of yes or no particular answer. But for big sort of fans of the game like me that wanted to go back,
I am sort of interested, particularly with the TV series coming out, well, next year. As you mentioned, there is a trailer for the TV series which went up yesterday. I may sort of dive back into this, although I haven't got a PS5 at the moment, so I don't know whether it's going to be worth my while yet, but assuming it either comes on PC or I upgrade my system, that may be something that I look at going to take a look at, because this is like they did a remaster, didn't they, previously, and then this is an actual remake. I may take a look at this at some point.
Yeah, the remaster was kind of them saying the PS3 is really, really awkward. Let's just remaster this for PS4.
Yeah.
It's interesting because they made this new version of PS Plus, right? Where you can buy / subscribe, whatever, to get PS1 and 2 games. And they recently, they celebrated 20 years of Sly Cooper, and they put the trilogy and the fourth game on there. And it tells you about how awkward PS3 games are. You can't buy those games. You can only subscribe and stream those games. You can't download PS3 games on a 4 or a 5 because they're basically really, really awkward. One of the reasons they're really awkward is because the PS3 uses something called a cell processor, which every sort of dev and person involved with PlayStation has looked back at that and said like, yeah, that was a big mistake. So this was the remaster was basically, hey, this game's really big and important. We need it on PS4. So, but no, Part 1's really, really good. In terms of your PC comments and stuff, they have said that this Part 1, this remake is in development for PC, but I don't know about Last of Us Part 2.
Right.
So that situation at the moment. Two other shows that have kind of come back that I've been watching as well. High School Musical, the musical, the series. I've got the season finale sitting there waiting for me, and it's been there for about a week or so. So this is the third season of the show. It's been good in terms of what they've been doing. The one kind of out of their hands problem that they had is that Olivia Rodrigo left this season, or was a bit in and out of this season, but I think she's like left at the end of season three. But then I read some stuff about like, hey, how can we sort of, is she in season four? It's a bit sort of all over the place, because literally throughout the season she's kind of popping in and out of scenes, popping in and out of parts of the plot and stuff. Obviously she's got quite busy with her music career and things like that. I think she had some sort of documentary come out on Disney Plus, and it's just left a big, because she's like one of the major characters, she's one of the main two. I would say her character and then the other one called Ricky, they're kind of they're supposed to sort of be in place of the Zac Efron and Vanessa Hudgens characters in the original films. They're supposed to be sort of in those roles, not the same characters, but those sort of same roles.
Yeah,
because at the end of season two she kind of says to Ricky and some others about like, hey, I've got offers to go and do my thing, you know, my music thing at this other place, and then you get like totally separate scenes with her in this season, which I understand the situation around it. It didn't help the season,
right?
Because her storyline and her stuff that's going on just feels so, it almost feels like a different show in a way. And her just not be, because you've got like, you know, the chemistry between the cast and stuff, they really are great characters together, and she's just not there and she's off doing another thing. In terms of the other stuff, so like the music and the other stuff that's going on, it's that part's still really great. It's just missing her in this other separate thing. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But I haven't seen the finale yet, so I don't know what they do with her particular character.
Yeah.
We shall see. But again, it's not like she had a falling out with anybody or anything. It was just a case of, hey, her music career has gotten a bit bigger. I guess there was maybe schedule conflicts or something.
Yeah.
And she just couldn't really be in this season. Which, to be fair, throughout season two, there's a lot of hints of sort of she's getting offers to do music elsewhere, and she's kind of on the out a bit. So
yeah,
it's unfortunate when, because we've seen things similar to that happen quite often in obviously like Walking Dead, where some actors and people have sort of gone off to do other things. Some of them have come back, some of them haven't. It's an unfortunate situation, but it kind of caused a bit of an imbalance in this season, I think, as well. So that's kind of unfortunate. But I will watch the finale at some point and kind of go from there, because I'm still going to keep watching the show. It's just how they go about doing the show kind of without her going forward, I suppose. So one of the shows that's come back that I think has actually improved, Central Park has been running its third season so far. I remember saying with last season about it wasn't bad, it was just, it was a bit of a mixed bag of songs that were too long and a bit repetitive, and that the stories weren't quite all gelling and sticking together. I think this third season's got a lot of a better flow to it. I thought the structure's a bit better, the storylines are a bit more interesting and things like that. Especially like some of the stories that Betsy's going through this season, I think have been quite interesting. She's been a bit more sort of challenged as a character, which has been quite fun to see. The songs are a lot better as well. They're a lot sort of, not necessarily just shorter, but they've got a better flow to them as well. And just in all the little departments from the problems in season two, they've kind of cleared things up for season three, which has made the show a lot sort of just better to watch. So that's been good that's improved. Any thoughts on the last two shows there?
I've never seen High School Musical at all. and I watched a few of the Central Park episodes in season one and then never really went back to it. It didn't entirely grab me particularly well. So great that they're there and people are enjoying them, but they're just not my sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, they also did a voice cast change,
I remember,
for one of the characters in season two. I've been trying to work out the whole time who Kristen Bell is voicing, because I've been trying to listen out for her voice, and it was only in the last episode I actually caught her voice. I don't know why I couldn't catch it before, but who she's playing now, and I was like, oh, that's who you're playing. That's it's somebody that's sort of tied in with the family still, like a friend of the family or something. But that's quite good. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. How about you?
Well, you've done a couple of games and I'm going to do a couple more, because I've been gaming as well this week, and there's a few new things that came out, one of which is one that I've been waiting for a while, which is Return to Monkey Island. It's an old school point and click adventure series. It's been around, Secret of Monkey Island first came out in 1990, so and it was like on the Amiga, so that was my first experience with it. And there were LucasArts pixel graphic pirate adventures with with a wonderful sense of humor and comedy to them. They're created by a guy called Ron Gilbert, who did the first two games, which was The Secret of Monkey Island and Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge. They then made a number of others. There's like The Escape from Monkey Island, Curse of Monkey Island, Tales of Monkey Island, but Ron Gilbert had nothing to do with them. When Disney bought LucasArts, they were sort of starting to talk about whether there would be any movement on these sort of properties. And Ron Gilbert apparently sort of said, you know, I'd quite like to either buy the rights to Monkey Island off you or do something with that property. Eventually, it came to pass and Ron Gilbert came back to the franchise and he has a new game called Return to Monkey Island. It's very, very much in the vein of the first two games. It's the closest you are ever going to get to a very classic LucasArts point-and-click adventure. It's not pixel art. It is full-blown, beautiful art style, actually. It's a very sort of stylized art style, but they've done it really, really well. But in terms of the gameplay, it is very much a sort of standard 2D point-and-click adventure game of, you know, you go around, you pick up various random objects, you use them to interact with other things in the world, you can combine them to make other things and use them to be able to advance the story. The lead character, Guybrush Threepwood, who is the main character that's been throughout all the games, you start off actually playing his children and it sort of introduces you into it and they're playing around in a theme park based around Guybrush's adventures. And it ends up with you getting told this story because it's sort of a slight sort of nudge to the fact that The Secret of Monkey Island has never been revealed up until this point, despite that being the name of the first game. There was never actually a reveal as to what it was. So the kid is sort of sat with Guybrush going, so what was The Secret of Monkey Island? And then Guybrush goes into this story and you go back and there's a wibbly wobbly timey thing and you end up going back in time to Guybrush telling this story. And every so often it will cut back to the sort of kid on the bench being told the story by his dad. So it introduces a bunch of characters that you've seen in the previous games. There's Elaine, which is Guybrush's wife. LeChuck, who is the evil zombie pirate that is the nemesis in it. There's Murray, who's a talking skull. There's a voodoo lady. There's a lot of the characters that have been in the previous games are back in this game as well. It is very much feels like the third part to those first two Ron Gilbert games. So if you like the Monkey Island series, it's very much a game that's worth picking up, is worth playing. It isn't very long. I mean, I think I did it in under 10 hours, but it's only like sort of £17 or £20 or something. It's not like a full price game anyway. If you like those sort of point and click adventure games, it is really worth picking up. The first two were great. They're some of my favorite games, and this one is just a wonderful continuation of that as well. It's all fully voiced. The voice acting's great. The animation style is lovely. Visually, it looks brilliant. I'd be interested to see if they do any more of it after this. But really, really worth picking up. That's Return to Monkey Island. Is that a game series you've actually come across at any point? Because, I mean, it's been around for a long, long time.
It's one I've heard a lot about. I know that Neil Druckmann, who's part of The Last of Us and Naughty Dog, he's said a lot of good things about it. I think he said he makes a cameo appearance in this game. I don't know if you've come across that. But
He may do. I don't remember spotting him, but maybe he does. Maybe he's a voice somewhere in it.
Okay. I've heard a lot of good things about this series. So it might be one that I should check out. I think when I spoke to Nikki Rapp before, who's a voice actress for two characters called Lily, I think she's mentioned, obviously that was going back to like the Telltale days and all that, which I was talking to her about her performance as Lily in Telltale's Walking Dead. She's mentioned it. So a lot of people sort of around me have mentioned it. So maybe it is a game I should probably look at.
Yeah, I think Telltale did the Tales of Monkey Island games. Yes, they did. They did one of them. But as I say, this is the sort of Return to Monkey Island is really the third part of that original trilogy after sort of The Secret of Monkey Island and Monkey Island 2. This is really okay. The sort of the third part of that trilogy. The other games weren't Ron Gilbert games. They were done by other people. It's brilliant though. And if you liked those sort of straight up point and click adventures, really worth going to pick up. The other thing on the gaming side of things is Satisfactory finally released update 6, which is a smaller update than some of the previous ones. Satisfactory, if you've never played it, is a building game where you're dumped on a planet and you have to mine resources and set up a factory to make increasingly complex things, to make even more increasingly complex things. I did see a little video that somebody did sort of talking about Satisfactory and was kind of, okay, so I started this building game and you put down a miner, it takes in 30 ore and puts out 30 bars of metal. That's really easy to work out. And then the next thing I've got to do, each of them takes 15 bars of metal. So I've got to divide that in half. And okay, so I need double the amount of things to make this item. And then it's like, this next thing takes 13.5 bars of metal. Who the hell introduced algebra into my video game? There is a certain amount of that, but it is really, really good fun. And the update 6 adds some really nice little additions. They've made a few interface changes. They've updated the AI on some of the wildlife which there is around. They've made some changes to some of the maps, which meant I had to completely restart because I was playing on the experimental branch, because the update 6 has been out in experimental for a while, but this is like the release onto the early access branch of it. They're very much working up to releasing 1.0 right now. But they made some major changes to one of the areas and it effectively buried half my factory, so I had to start again. They've made changes to how some of the things progresses. They've made changes to how the skybox works. They've added weather in there, which wasn't there before, so it looks really beautiful. They've added things like, it used to be a case of you only had one body slot on your character before, and now they've had multiple body slots, so you can have something on your head and on your feet at the same time, which seems like a fairly basic change, but it makes such a huge difference to things. They changed the way the mapping system works. So there was a lot of sort of quality of life updates with this update. It's been a wonderful, wonderful game, and the developers are very responsive to things. They know how to do things in early access and keep it moving, keep it going, keep the audience engaged. It's a really, really wonderful game, particularly if you like those sort of building games. Update 6 for Satisfactory is out now, and that's definitely worth checking out. On to TV, though, and the big thing this week of being Star Wars Andor, I would guess, more than anything else. Star Wars Andor, which I think a lot of people have been waiting to come out ever since we've seen the trailers, it looked very different to anything else. And I think it's fair to say it is very different to anything else that they've done in Star Wars. There's no Jedi. There's not even really any Empire in this. You are, of course, following Cassian Andor, who is the character from Rogue One. It's his backstory. It is a set period of time. They've was ordered for 2 seasons of 12 episodes, and that will be it. Then it will run into the events of Rogue One. It's very much sort of telling the story of how Cassian Andor got involved with the rebellion in the first place. But the feel of it is very different. It feels Star Wars, but also not as much. The main character in it, not a Jedi, he's some random guy on a backwater planet that's trying to get by. He's a thief, essentially, but he's stealing from the Empire. And he's just trying to get by. And an incident happens. He needs money, so he's trying to get off the planet by selling this thing, and he has this contact that knows somebody that will buy it, and that's sort of the main setup for the story. The main protagonist in it, which I find really interesting for this, is there is a security service, and it's not the Empire. They're the sort of people that look after the backwater planets that the Empire can't really be bothered to even go and manage. You know, they're not even worth time to send stormtroopers to. So they've got these security services that are basically Jobsworth kind of policemen that are there to really just manage and look after these systems. And even they aren't doing a brilliant job of it. After this incident, there is one sort of Jobsworth security officer that decides that he's going to go and find Cassian Andor. And he heads off with a group of people. And of course, that doesn't go the way that he thinks it's going to go. But it's a really, really well set up series. I found it incredibly engaging and just so different to everything else. I'm glad they put those first three episodes out together, because there is a very definite arc over those first three episodes, and it ends at a really intriguing point. I'm very much looking forward to seeing the rest of it. They're, what, 40 minutes long, most of the episodes, I think, in this?
Yeah, about that.
What did you think?
I think it's all right so far. I think my issue towards it is I didn't really get on with Rogue One as a film.
Right.
So having a series that connects to that is something I'm just not quite connecting with. I still think it's good in places. I'm still enjoying some of it, but I kind of understand and appreciate what you said as well, because one thing I've spoken about before is like different flexible IP that different studios and companies and streaming services have got, which is something that's quite important. And Star Wars is a very flexible IP, as you said. You know, there's no Jedi or really anything like that here, no sort of like bounty hunters and Mandalorians and characters like that, so it's something different. And that's what you should be doing with a flexible IP like Star Wars, is not always just having like, hey, another person with a lightsaber and that sort of thing, which to be fair is what Mandalorian did really, really well at the start to differentiate itself. It's like, hey, this isn't another thing about Rey or Luke or anybody like that. It's about this other bounty hunter person, which is quite cool. So I like that that is a thing that continues to happen. It's just that this particular thing just hasn't connected with me as much. But again, that's because I didn't majorly enjoy the film that this is connected to. But no, I'll watch the rest of it still. As you said, it's quite short, isn't it? It's like a limited series idea. So I'll still go through it and finish it, and hopefully I enjoy it more as we go on.
Yeah, I'm finding the story interesting and engaging and different. I like the fact that they've not used Tatooine for the millionth time. It's a bunch of different planets that...
Yeah, no more desert.
It's a bunch of different planets that sort of industrial. They're ones that we've not really seen. They're forgotten backwater. Things that are kind of overlooked by the Empire. That's, like I say, they're so unbothered by these planets that they just sent a random civilian security force to go and look after them rather than even bother sending stormtroopers to do it. So that's what I really like about this. It's an area of the universe we've never seen before. And I think obviously the whole thing is about the building up and the recruitment of people into the rebellion. I mean, that's where we're sort of building towards. And to do that in this, and the fact that these are sort of backwater ignored planets, and that's where bits of the rebellion is sort of starting to rise, that I find a quite an interesting sort of premise as well. Diego Luna is great as Cassian. You get some of his backstory in flashback, as well as where he actually started him sort of as a child, and they show a couple of bits of that as well. It is well worth going to watch. It's an interesting, very texturally different show to anything else that we've had. So I would highly recommend going to look at that. And the first three episodes are up now, and then the rest of it is coming out weekly. And the other thing that returned was Ghosts, which not really a lot to say about Ghosts, other than it is more of the same. It's wonderfully funny. It's a lovely, lovely comedy on the BBC. That the whole thing is actually up on iPlayer, so you don't have to wait for it to go out weekly. You can go and just binge your way through it on iPlayer right now. I really enjoy that show. It's so wonderfully fun and funny, and they've just got their first guests at the B&B. They've got the gatehouse open as a sort of Airbnb kind of setup, and it opens with the first guests there. So that I'm just finding really fun and really enjoyable, so worth going to check that out. But that's all up on iPlayer if you want to go and check that. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We kick off the TV and film news with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. There is one cancellation we have this week, and it was a show we were actually talking about with Gray last week, Queer as Folk, the remake that they did in the US. Apparently didn't go very far, didn't do well enough on Peacock, and they've cancelled it after one season, so that will not be returning, which is a shame. Did you catch any of that? I mean, Gray seemed to quite like it.
I didn't, no. It is disappointing to see something with Queer in the title getting cancelled. That's not a nice thing to kind of Legacy. But no, this wasn't something I actually caught. Was it on Sky over here then?
It was on Stars Play over here, which is probably why you didn't manage to catch it. But it was a Peacock show in the US. It is a shame because, you know, Grey seemed to quite like it and said it wasn't just a straight remake of the beloved original UK version. It was a very different sort of updated version of the show. So it's a shame that that's not gone further, but that's been cancelled after one season. On the renewal side, Reservation Dogs, that's been renewed for a third season on Hulu. That runs on Disney Plus over here. I tried a few episodes of that, really didn't land with me. I struggled with it. That's the Taika Waititi show. And Love on the Spectrum has been renewed for a second season at Netflix as well. So those are the two renewals. In pickups and other news, the Doctor Who special, the final outing for Jodie Whittaker, that has now been given a title. It's called The Power of the Doctor. It's coming in October. They have released a few pictures as well. We know the Master is going to be in it, and it's going to have Daleks and Cybermen, so that'll be all them together for the first time in a very long while that they're all going to be on the same show. They also showed some photos of Sophie Aldridge, who reprises her role as Ace, the Seventh Doctor's companion, and Janet Fielding is back as Tegan as well, who was a companion for the Fourth and Fifth Doctors. So kind of throwing everything with the kitchen sink at it for this, but that's fine. It is the last outing for Jodie Whittaker. It's the last bit of Chris Chibnall writing before Russell T Davies takes back over again and Shuti Gatwa takes over as well. Well, we don't know, because there is some suspicion that there have been suggestions, and we don't know whether this is true, so I can say it because it's all rumour, but there has been some suggestion that it's possible that Jodie actually regenerates back into David Tennant for a little bit before David Tennant regenerates into Shuti Gatwa. That's been one suggestion of how the David Tennant stuff fits in, because we do know that David Tennant is coming back as well. It's going to be an interesting one, that, to see what happens. Are you up to date on Doctor Who, or did you drop out at one point?
I didn't see those. Was it those six Christmas episodes or whatever it was?
Yeah,
I never quite got around to them.
Yeah.
But I heard so many endlessly bad things about those episodes that it really put me off.
Yeah.
So, it's a shame, because I really liked Jodie's companions. I really liked her herself as well as the Doctor. It was just the writing around everything. And I kind of keep thinking, like, should I push my way through those six episodes and then watch this so I can fully see all of Jodie's run as the Doctor, which I do want to do. I just got really put off by, like, almost everybody on, like, Facebook and Twitter and everybody else being like, what is this rubbish? And I was like, oh, how bad is this thing? So I don't know. I will pick up with it again at some point. I do have the interest to at least finish Jodie's run in some way, shape or form, and then see the new Doctor come in, certainly, especially with Russell coming back, which should be great. So
yeah.
I'm not like on the outs on Doctor Who. I just kind of want to figure out where to jump back in, I guess.
Yes, I hope Jodie has a long and successful career with Big Finish after this, because a lot of the Doctors that have been served badly on TV have gone on to have incredible careers doing the Doctor on the Big Finish audio adventures. Paul McGann being the obvious one, who's essentially kept the franchise alive single-handedly with Big Finish until it came back with Russell T Davies. He had a great run on that. Colin Baker has done some really good work in the Big Finish audio stuff, and there is nothing wrong with Jodie's Doctor. She's been superb in that role. She's really embodied it so well, but the writing has been awful. I mean, the Flux run, a lot of people got upset because it had some major changes to the background of the character and messed around with the mythology quite a lot, and I think that's what upset people more than anybody else. But overall, I didn't mind those episodes so much. It's still not brilliant writing, but it wasn't as bad as I think some people made out it was.
Okay.
So I would maybe go and watch those and then do this final thing, and then we'll see what happens when Russell comes back. I wish Jodie had been served better. I would have liked to have seen a season with Russell writing her, because I think that would have been really, really interesting to see, but not to be, unfortunately. We haven't got a date for that yet, but it is coming in October, they have said. Keep an eye out for that. And that's Doctor Who, The Power of the Doctor. Few advanced air dates we've got. War of the Worlds Season 3, that's landing on the 19th of October on Disney Plus. I'm looking forward to that coming back, because that's been a really good series.
I really enjoyed those two seasons. I have no idea where the third season's going to go.
No.
But we will find out.
Let the Right One In, which is a horror series based on the sort of child vampire movie that came out. This is a series based around that same premise. That's coming on the 8th of October to Paramount Plus. and Chapel Wait, which is the Stephen King adaptation of Jerusalem's Lot, I think it is. That is coming on the 19th of October to Paramount Plus, and that's been getting some really good reviews. So there's some interesting stuff coming on streaming services to keep an eye out for there. There was another bit of news that dropped as well. It was about James Earl Jones, who is, of course, the voice of Darth Vader, amongst many other things, but I mean, that's what particularly he's known for. And he has announced that he's retiring from the role, but he has signed the rights to use his voice over to Lucasfilm and the Ukrainian company Respeecher, who is the tech startup that uses archival recording footage to create new conversations. It's what they did to create the voice of young Luke in the Book of Boba Fett series. So it's going to be using that. I actually think this could work quite well with Darth Vader, because Darth Vader's a fairly emotionless voice anyway. Yeah. It didn't work great for Luke. They did a reasonable job with it, but I don't think it quite landed. Whereas I think you could do it with Darth Vader quite well, because he's a fairly measured performance anyway. I think this could work quite well for them. And I'm glad that they're managing to do it this way, and he's agreed to sign the voice rights over to them, rather than them getting an impressionist to come and do it, which, I mean, I'm sure that there are a million people out there, I'm sure, can do an impression of James Earl Jones being Darth Vader. But yes, I mean, it's quite nice that they've gone down this route. So it means that he's going to be the voice of it, which is really, really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy is 90 something. I mean, it's fair enough. I think
he served us very, very well.
Yeah.
In a really, one of the most iconic roles ever, really, for Darth Vader. Obviously, he's done other roles. He's been in The Lion King and whatnot, but it's such an iconic voice, isn't it? Especially Darth Vader himself. Even just the breathing of Darth Vader is very iconic. You know, you hear that and you start to panic. He's been a legend, obviously, for the Star Wars franchise, and in whatever way they can work it. Obviously, this was more of like a prequel-ish sort of fill-in-the-gap type thing with the Obi-Wan series, but it got us back with Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, which is always a good thing. So if they can find like slots of story to put Darth Vader in, it's never going to be a bad thing, is it? Because Darth Vader is always very engaging to watch as a character. Yeah, thanks to James Earl Jones for serving us incredibly well with Darth Vader.
Yeah, they actually did use, I think, some of the Respeecher stuff for the Obi-Wan series as well. James Earl Jones was involved at that point, but it was more as a sort of guidance rather than him doing all the voices for it. They actually snuck it in to test it out, and I think it worked really well in there. It also helps the fact that you've not got to lip sync it to anything, you know, because it's under the mask. So I think this is a really good idea. It's a great way of doing it. Have a happy retirement, James. You've earned it. I'm glad that we'll get his voice to continue on with this. Moving on to Netflix, who had a major bunch of announcements. I mean, like lots and lots of announcements this week, because they had their Tudum special event, which is the sort of fan event where they release lots of dates and videos and all sorts of things and announce shows. And it ran sort of all day, because they separated it up. So there was a South Korean segment and a Japanese segment. We're focusing mainly on the sort of rest of the world bit of it here. But even in that segment, they announced just a load of like dates and things and videos. And we'll let you know, there's a post up on the website. There are trailers for some of these. They're not everything, but there are trailers for some of these as well. I've reordered them from how they announced them into date order as well, so you'll know when things are coming. Cool. The first one by date order, which did have a trailer going up, was called The Watcher. It's coming on the 13th of October. It's from Ryan Murphy, the creator of anything from Glee to American Horror Story. It stars Bobby Cavalier as Dean and Naomi Watts as Nora Branagh, who just purchased their dream home in the idyllic suburb of Westfield, New Jersey. But after putting all of their savings into closing the deal, they soon realise the neighbourhood is less than welcoming. A kooky older woman named Pearl, played by Mia Farrow, and her brother Jasper, played by Terry Kinney, who sneak into Branagh's house and hide their dumbwaiter. There's Karen, played by Jennifer Coolidge, the realtor, and an old acquaintance of Nora's who makes them feel like they don't really belong, and nosy neighbour Mitch, played by Richard Kind, and Mo, played by Margot Martindale, who don't seem to understand the property lines. Their icy welcome quickly turns into a full-blown living hell when an ominous letter from someone calling himself the Watcher starts to arrive, terrorising the Branaghs to their breaking point as the neighbourhood's sinister secrets come spilling out. This is a apparently based on a true story as well, which is something that Ryan Murphy has, of course, done on various other projects before. This sounds like it's going to be really interesting and creepy and very much a Ryan Murphy series. It's called The Watcher. It's coming out on the 13th of October. Any interest in that one?
Maybe. It just, and I don't mean to like keep bringing this up with Netflix, but when it comes out, will we know?
Well, yes.
Because unless you're the new Jeffrey Dahmer thing and everybody's talking about it, not everything on Netflix gets noticed. My same thing for that applies for all of these announcements. It might be a great series, and if it is, that's very good. But yeah, they still have that same problem.
It does have the advantage that this is a one-off, so I don't think this
renewal cancellation thing.
Yeah, so no renewal cancellation. I think this is a one-off thing that they're doing. It seems like it's going to be a self-contained story. I'm not 100% on that, but that's certainly how it comes across.
Okay.
There is a film called The School for Good and Evil, which is coming on the 19th of October. In the village of Galvedon, two misfits and best friends, Sophie, played by Sophia Ann Caruso, and Agatha, played by Sophia Weil, share the unlikeliest of bonds. Sophie, a golden-haired seamstress, dreams of escaping her daily life to become a princess, while Agatha, with her grim aesthetic and offbeat mother, has the makings of a real witch. One night, under a blood-red moon, a powerful force sweeps them away to the School for Good and Evil, where the true stories behind every great fairy tale begins. Something is amiss from the start. Sophie is dropped off at the School for Evil, run by the glamorous and acid-tongued Lady Lesso, played by Charlize Theron, and Agatha at the School for Good, overseen by the sunny and kind Professor Dove, played by Kerry Washington. Yes, they're sort of backwards by the sounds of it. But this sounds like it could be quite an interesting and fun film. It's got a sort of fish out of water thing going on, but that's called The School for Good and Evil. That's coming on the 19th of October. Sticking with films, there is a trailer up for Enola Holmes 2, and they did a little sort of bit about that. That's coming on the 4th of November. So if you like the first one, the second one will be coming.
I saw the first film. It's got Millie Bobby Brown.
Yes.
As Enola, and Henry Cavill, if Warner Brothers remembers him. Yes. They've got him. He's playing Sherlock Holmes, so adding more great characters to his CV. You know, Superman, and you've got Geralt, and now you've got Sherlock Holmes. It's a pretty great film. It was a pretty good fun time. I reviewed it when it came out a couple of years ago, and I've been sort of tracking when the announcement for this would be coming out, because I kind of speculated at the time, like, hey, you could do a Sherlock Holmes film that's just Henry Cavill's character. You could do, obviously, a sequel. You could do, you know, both of them in the film again, which it looks like this is going to be doing.
Yes.
As well as the Last of Us trailer, I kind of noticed that this went up yesterday as well. So trailer for this looks great. I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see if they do like a third one or a Sherlock Holmes film after this, because you've got a couple of options, which is good. But it also helps that you've got Stranger Things star and obviously somebody who used to kind of be Superman and is still playing Geralt as well. So yeah. So you got a couple of people that are on your same platform, obviously, you know, The Witcher and Elle from Stranger Things. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that. November 4th, isn't it? So
November 4th for that. Also on November 4th, you've got Manifest Season 4 Part 1 landing. So this is the first part of the final season of Manifest. We knew that was the date already, but they've actually put a trailer up for it now. So I'm really interested to see how that story ends. I know he had six seasons planned, so it's going to be a little bit compressed, but it is longer. There are more episodes in the full season than there would have been had it stayed on network TV. So you're sort of getting a season and a half rather than two more seasons, basically, or three more seasons. So they're going to have to have cut it down a little bit, but he did have a plan for how it was going to end. So hopefully he's managed to find a way of working that into it. But the trailer looks really good, and that's landing on the 4th of November. On the 9th of November, The Crown returns for a fifth season. There was no trailer for this. They did show a little clip of it in the actual Tudum live stream presentation, but it didn't show off an awful lot. It was basically just a sort of slow camera pans of Charles and Diana, which of course is the main sort of focus of this fifth season, because it was their marriage breakdown and all that sort of stuff. So that's where we are with The Crown. That's season 5. I think there's one more season to come after this, but that's landing on the 9th of November. That was the sort of big date announcement for that. Then we have a new show called 1899, which comes on the 17th of November. It's from the creators of Dark. It's an 8-episode series which follows the mysterious circumstances around the voyage of an immigrant ship from Europe to New York. The passengers, all of different backgrounds and nationalities, are united in their hopes and dreams for a new century and their future abroad. When they discover a second ship adrift on the open sea that had gone missing for months, their journey takes an unexpected turn. What they find on board will turn their passage into the promised land into a nightmare-like riddle connecting each of the passengers' pasts through a web of secrets. That sounds like an interesting and very dark series, which, I mean, coming from the creators of Dark, that seems quite fun. But 17th of November, yeah. If you'll fancy that.
Yeah, that sounds kind of interesting. I'll try to notice when that comes out. So.
Yes, the 1899, that one is called. Dead to Me also got a date for its third and final season. That's on the 17th of November. I think there's a trailer for that as well. That's been a while. It's been a couple of years since the second season came out. But so I want to see how they're going to end that. And it was one of those shows which I think three seasons is fine for that.
Yeah. You're not going to get 5, 8, 10 seasons out of this show.
Because, you know, there is always a big twist towards the end of it, which we won't go into, but there is always a big twist towards the end. And there is only so many times you can get away with doing that and making it work. So I think third and final season is absolutely fine for this. It's been brilliant. It's wonderfully fun, dark sort of murder mystery comedy. 17th of November for Dead to Me season 3.
Yeah, it's a great show. Looking forward to having that back.
Also on the 17th of November, you've got Glass Onion, which is an expansion to the Knives Out series. It's Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. Benotic Blank returns to peel back the layers of a new Ryan Johnson whodunit. This fresh adventure finds the intrepid detective at a lavish private estate on a Greek island, but how and why he comes to be there is the only of first of many puzzles. Blank soon meets a distinctly disparate group of friends who gather at the invitation of billionaire Miles Bronn for their yearly reunion. Amongst those on the guest list are Miles' former business partner Andy Brand, current Connecticut governor Claire DeBella, cutting-edge scientist Lionel Toussaint, fashion designer and former model Birdie J, and her conscientious assistant Peg, and influencer Duke Cody and his psychic girlfriend Whiskey. As in all the best murder mysteries, each character harbours their own secrets, lives and motivations. When somebody turns up dead, everybody is a suspect. Returning to the franchise, he began, Academy Award nominee filmmaker Ryan Johnson writes and directs and assembles an all-star cast which sees the return of Daniel Craig alongside Ed Norton, Catherine Hahn, Leslie Odom Jr., Jessica Henwick, Madeline Klein, Kate Hudson, and Dave Bautista in there. Huh. Yeah, interesting collection of people.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first film when it came out a few years ago. I can't remember the exact money amount, but Netflix has put a lot of money into this film.
Right.
And particularly into, I think they paid quite a lot of money for two films, I think it was. That was on top of the reported amount that they paid Daniel Craig. Obviously, he's kind of the star of this. Mm-hmm. And then plus you've got to, you know, pay everybody else and pay for everything else and then pay for marketing. So they've paid a lot of money for this. So hopefully it's good. But if you've got kind of the same people, like you got Ryan Johnson coming back, you got Daniel Craig coming back, hopefully it'll be as good and as fun as the first one was, because I did enjoy that film.
Yeah, I haven't seen the first movie. I do want to go watch it. I just haven't got around to it yet. I'm terrible at keeping up with films.
I think it's on Amazon.
I think it is, yes.
Yeah, I think it's on Netflix.
That's called Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery, and that's on the 17th of November that lands. 23rd of November, we have Wednesday Landing, which I think we got the date for that last week, but they did drop a new clip up, which is quite fun. It's Wednesday versus Thing. Thing has basically been sent with Wednesday because she's at this boarding school and he's been sent to spy on her without her knowledge, and it's her negotiating with Thing whether he should be reporting back to the family or whether he's kind of going to help her out and stuff. But so there's a really fun little clip. It looks really good, this show. That's sort of Wednesday from the Addams Family, and it's a slightly different take on it with Wednesday at the boarding school, and it's from Tim Burton. But 23rd of November for that. There is another film called Slumberland, which comes on the 24th of November. They put a little clip up for this. It takes the audience onto a magical place, a dream world where precocious Nemo, played by Marlon Berkeley, and her eccentric companion Flip, played by Jason Momoa, embark on an adventure of a lifetime. After her father Pete, played by Kyle Chandler, is unexpectedly lost to sea, young Nemo's idyllic Pacific Northwest existence is completely upended when she's sent to live in the city with her well-meaning, deeply awkward uncle, Philip, played by Chris O'Dowd. Her new school and new routine are challenged by day, but at night a secret map to the fantastical world of Slumberland connects Nemo to Flip. A rough around the edges but love lovable outlaw who quickly becomes her partner and guide. She and Flip soon find themselves on an incredible journey traversing dreams and fleeing nightmares, where Nemo begins to hope that she will be reunited with her father once again. It sounds like a sort of pretty fun, feel-good family film, that one. But yeah, Jason Momoa is usually very watchable. Chris O'Dowd's really funny. Carl Chandler's great. I don't really know Marlowe Barkley, but yeah, Slumberland, that's called, and 24th of November for that one.
Yeah, sounds like it might be fun. Jason is very good at doing both quite serious stuff and more fun sort of things. Like, you see the more fun side of him in Aquaman, and then you see the more dramatic side of him in Sea.
Yeah.
Very good to watch, yeah.
Yeah, 24th of November, Slumberland, that is, if you want to check that. There was a very, very quick announcement, which, given it's coming in December, I was surprised they didn't say a little bit more about this, but 16th of December, there is a series called The Recruit. Stars Noah Centineo, who was from The Fosters, has announced the title of his new series called The Recruit. December 16th is the premiere date, and he released an image for it as well. Recruit stars Noah as a fledgling lawyer at the CIA who becomes enmeshed in a dangerous international power politics when a former asset threatens to expose the agency. That's the setup for it. It's a series. It was fairly low key, and it was kind of less than a minute, that announcement. So, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't put a trailer up for that, given that it's supposed to be out in December, but you know, there you go. It's called The Recruit. It's 16th of December. There's that. The Witcher, there was a couple of announcements for when they are landing. The Witcher Blood Origin, which is the spin-off thing, which is a sort of limited series, that's landing on the 25th of December. So if you want something to do on Christmas Day after you've stuffed your face with turkey, then Blood Origin is going to be out then. You can binge your way through that. The Witcher Season 3, they are said, is coming summer 2023, which I don't think is any surprise. We knew that was going to be a little bit off, going to take a little while to land. But
That wasn't going to come out this year.
No. So, we knew that was going to be a while off yet.
Yeah. Usually with these things, you have, what, 18 months to 2 years?
Yeah.
The break between one and two was 2 years. So 18 months for this, roughly. Sounds about right.
Yeah. You've got Blood Origin on the 25th of December. So that will tide you over. And then Witcher Season 3 in summer 2023.
It was kind of disappointing when Season 2 came out and not many people were really, not at least in the same way that when Season 1 came out. I didn't see a lot of online discussion about The Witcher.
Yeah.
When Season 2 came out. I did when Season 1 came out, but not with Season 2. So hopefully, I don't know, people notice Season 3 more, or I don't know what exactly happened.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems to have gone down fairly well. And I mean, it got itself a
people seem to have liked it, yeah.
So we'll see. It's but yes, third season in the summer next year. You, Season 4, Part 1, that is going to be split into two parts for the new season of You. There is a trailer up for that as well. It's our main guy has moved to London for this series. Part 1 drops on the 10th of February next year, and Part 2 will drop on the 10th of March. So that's going to be split into two bits, which they've started doing with some of their series. I don't know what the reason for that, but that's what they're doing. They've not said it's a final season or anything, so that's You, Season 4. I'm way behind on that.
Is that one that you would think, because you've seen more of that, I think, than I have, and though Gray's watched some of it. How long can that guy do that for?
Well, I mean, they started it off in New York, I think, and then Los Angeles, and then they moved him somewhere else, and now he's in London. So it's one of those things that I don't know how long you can keep that up for.
Yeah.
Whether this ends up being a final season, I don't know, but they've split it into two parts. So, but they did that with Stranger Things, and Stranger Things has got one more season to go after this as well. So
that worked quite well with Stranger Things, those last two episodes. Just that little gap. It wasn't like a massive, massive jump. It was just a little gap to build that bit of, you know, what's going to happen with Vecna and all this other kind of stuff. It was, I thought that played out quite well.
Yeah.
Even though the episodes are really, really long, but still.
yeah. They're doing the same thing with this. So it's going to be a month break, basically, between the release of the first half and the second half.
I think they should keep doing that with some of their shows. Just break things up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting strategy.
Yeah. 10th of February for the first part of that, and then 10th of March for the second part of You, Season 4. There were clips and trailers for a few other things as well, although not dates. Queen Charlotte, A Bridgerton Story, which is a spin-off from the main Bridgerton thing, that's coming in 2023, and they released the first clip of that. There is a clip for Vikings Valhalla Season 2 that they've said is coming in 2023, and there was a trailer for Outer Banks Season 3, which is a show which is way more fun and entertaining than it has any right to be, but that's coming in 2023 as well. So there are no exact dates for those, but we know they're all coming next year. There was a sneak peek at Shadow and Bone Season 2. No date for that, but presumably that's going to be next year as well. And Lupin Season 3, again, no date, but there was a trailer for that as well. That's pretty much everything that was announced at the sort of rest of the world bit of the to-dumb announcements. There's some interesting stuff in there. It still has this problem of them not really promoting things well enough, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they've still just got the problem of too much stuff and not enough promotion for things. Mm-hmm. Their idea of quantity over quality, I don't think it... They still make some great shows that we all enjoy, like The Witcher and Stranger Things, obviously, and different things like that. But I really think they've got to calm down with just... The joke isn't there about like Netflix greenlights everything. That joke has almost kind of turned into reality.
Yeah.
Unless you're getting ready to be renewed for your fourth season in that case. But I spoke about this yesterday on The Last of Us thing. HBO and Apple have taken kind of similar approaches, which is you've got fewer shows, but like you look at the production quality of something like A House of the Dragon, or I know we've only had the trailer, but for The Last of Us, and the production quality there, mm-hmm. and there isn't tons of HBO shows, and they sort of rotate them really well in a good schedule, and Apple sort of does the same thing as well. They're the only two that really kind of do that, and I think Netflix needs to try and... I know it's because their release model's different and everything like that, but I think they've just got to make some adjustments and just stop making so much stuff, because most of it isn't being seen or even being noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless you're one of the bigger things, like, you know, The Crown or Witcher or Stranger Things, you know, these things that win Emmys that stand out. If you're one of these other smaller things, it's a problem for them.
Yes, it is. And I think people are very nervous about starting new shows on Netflix because...
Understandable, yeah.
You can get really, really into something and then, oh, it's cancelled, you know. And I think that has been putting people off quite a lot. And you know, like you say, you look at people like Apple in particular who just knock it out of the park every single time. I mean, there's very rare they have a dud show on that streaming service, and there aren't that many of them, but they're all top quality. So speaking of HBO, they are developing a new series based on Scanners, the sort of 80s movies franchise. They've got David Cronenberg, who is the person behind it. They've got him back exec producing on the new series. If you're unfamiliar with the original movies, it was a sort of sci-fi horror set in a world where a small number of men and women known as scanners are born with this incredible telepathic and telekinetic powers. While some use this power safely, it can also be used to cause damage, pain, and even death. There's a lot of the video covers have people's heads exploding on it, just to give you some idea.
Well, you see that in The Boys every single episode.
Well, that's true, yes. We follow Cameron Vale, a vagrant derelict who accidentally causes seizure on somebody in a mall using his telepathy. He's captured by a security company called Consec, who recruit Vale to infiltrate an underground group of rogue scanners led by a guy called Daryl Revoke, who was played by Michael Ironside in the movie, who is planning to create a race that will rule the world. That was the sort of setup for the world that you're kind of in. So you've got these sort of people that have these telekinetic powers, and some are using them for good and some are using them for evil. Potential new series is described as a visceral thriller set in the mind-bending world of David Cronenberg's seminal film. Pursued by relentless agents with unimaginable powers, two women living on the fringe of modern society must learn to work together to topple a vast conspiracy determined to bring them to heel. That is the setup for it. So it sounds like it's going to be you're following two people who are being hunted down by CONSEC agents, I would guess. That sounds like that. William Bridges is set as the writer and showrunner of the potential series. He was the person that wrote the USS Callister episode of Black Mirror, and he's also worked on things like Stranger Things and the AMC anthology series Soulmates as well. Jan Demange, who worked on Top Boy, Lovecraft County, and Secret Diary of a Call Girl, is set to direct it as well. I mean, there's some good people behind it, and I think it's an interesting setup. It's kind of an intriguing world. It's a well-known brand to people of a certain age, so don't know whether you've stumbled across any of the Scanner stuff. I mean, it's going back a bit.
I might have heard of it in passing somewhere. It does ring like a small bell. The description you've said here sounds really quite promising. I always like shows about people with powers. I mean, I've liked most of Heroes as well.
Yeah.
Those sorts of shows. So it doesn't always have to be Marvel and DC. There are other things out there, you know, with people with powers. Obviously, you've got things like, Elle's got powers in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But you've also got things like, you know, Umbrella Academy, all these other sort of comic booky sort of things as well. So it doesn't always have to be the Marvel and DC stuff, because there isn't really a ton of other shows not connected to like comic booky sort of stuff about people with powers. So yeah. If this is more in that sort of vein, that sounds quite interesting. HBO behind it, so we know the quality should be there at least. So yeah, I'll try and keep an eye out for this. It sounds quite interesting.
Yeah, they are developing at the moment, so there's no guarantee that it will go to series, but they seem fairly well set up. I mean, if mm-hmm. they've got a director signed on, they've got a writer signed on. No casting yet, but it's early days. So that I think that has a fairly good chance. Moving over onto Apple, we get to find out what Vince Gilligan of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul is doing next. He's landed at Apple after apparently there was a lot of money being thrown around at Vince for this, and he was sort of picking and choosing what he wanted to do. He eventually landed at Apple with a 2-season straight to series order for a series which is currently known as the Untitled Vince Gilligan Project. It's Vince Gilligan first thing since finishing with the Breaking Bad franchise. I mean, we don't know whether he's ever going to go back to it, but certainly that's the case. And he's bringing Rhea Seehorn along as well, who played Kim Wexler in Better Call Saul, who, he's great that she's coming along with him on this. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly what the new show is going to be about. It's been described as a blended, grounded genre drama that was something that was a bit more sort of Twilight Zone than grounded in the same way of Breaking Bad. It's going to be a little bit more leaning onto the sci-fi side of things by the sounds of it, which I think is kind of interesting. We do know that there were a lot of people lined up to hear Gilligan's pitch for it. He's looking at around $14 million per episode for the project as well. So it's not a cheap thing to make.
You'll get your money's worth, don't worry.
Yeah, but Apple has the money to spend on this. I mean, they've got deep pockets.
They've got a bit of money.
Yeah, it's Sony Pictures Television who are the company that are producing it, and it's going to be his first project since finishing with Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. After 15 years, I figured it was time to take a break from writing anti-heroes, and who's more heroic than the brilliant Rhea Seehorn? It's long past time she had her own show. I feel lucky to be working with her, he said. I really like that he's brought Rhea along with this. I think Definitely. She was great as Kim in Better Call Saul, and I'm just really excited to see what he does.
In terms of this, I don't even really care what this is about, because it's got Vince Gilligan and Rhea Seehorn, and unless somebody else messes this up, I don't know how this could possibly go wrong, because we've seen Rhea's incredible acting, who's somehow not won an Emmy for Better Call Saul yet, which is a crime. We've seen more so in kind of, as Better Call Saul went on and on, saw more depth to Kim and figuring out the mystery of what happened to her and all that sort of stuff, or where she was in Breaking Bad, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that was incredibly engaging and really, really well written. And yeah, to me, Breaking Bad's still the best thing I've seen on TV, and Vince Gilligan was one of the ones that made it and obviously was part of Better Call Saul. So you've got two incredibly talented people on this, and the production and the trust with Apple as well, as we've said before, with quality over quantity. So no red flag so far with this. I think this has got a lot of promise behind it, and we don't even know what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, sort of implies that it's going into the slightly sort of weirder, more fantastical areas, with it sort of being a bit more Twilight Zone-y, which mm-hmm. he has experience on. I mean, his TV career started out working on The X-Files, and he developed the Lone Gunman spin-off series as well. And, so he has background in doing that sort of weird sci-fi type of stuff. It's nice to see him go back to that and taking a break from the grounded things that he did with Better Call Saul. I love those shows. I'm really interested to see where this goes and what it ends up actually being. And I'm glad to see Rhea in there as well. So I'm with you. I think it's going to be definitely one to look out for. We don't know when that's going to land. We just know that that's all the cast have announced. Yeah, take your time. I'd rather you spend time building it than rush it out.
And Apple doesn't, from what I understand, Apple doesn't tend to really rush things as much. So this isn't like a network season where it's like, hey, you have to start a new season of The Flash by October.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. So. No.
And 2-season order straight off the bat as well for that. So
good.
We'll bring you more on that when we know more about it. But that's all the news for this week. Just some highlights for next week on TV. So, highlights for next week, we have Nine Perfect Strangers, which is the limited series that's landing on Channel 4 on the 28th of September at 10 p.m. That had previously run on Amazon, I think, in the UK, but that's the network premiere of it, but that's Nine Perfect Strangers. This England, which is the limited series which has Ken Branagh starring as Boris Johnson, that's coming to Sky Atlantic on the 28th of September at 9 p.m. The Mighty Ducks Game Changers Season 2, that returns on the 28th of September as well. The Old Man finally lands on Disney Plus. That's on the 28th of September. I think we're probably the last territory in the world to have that, because it seems to have aired on like Disney Plus and everywhere else before us. That is landing on Disney Plus on the 28th of September. That's the Jeff Bridges series about a retired CIA operative that gets forced back into the world he thought he'd left behind. Fantasy Football League returns with Matt Lucas and Ellis James as hosts. That's on Sky Max. That's on the 29th of September at 10 p.m. Taskmaster returns on Channel 4. That's for season 14. That's on the 29th of September at 9 p.m. There is a show called Coyote coming to Paramount Plus on the 3rd of October. That stars Michael Chiklis as a US Border Patrol agent who finds himself working for the very people he'd previously been trying to stop. That looks like it could be quite interesting. I think that's dropping as a box set, and that's on Paramount Plus on the 3rd of October. That's called Coyote. And then The Walking Dead returns on the 3rd of October. That's for Season 11C, the final part of The Walking Dead, the main show. I'm looking forward to see how that ends, but that's the 3rd of October, and that's on Disney Plus as well. That's all the stuff we've got coming this week on TV. If people want to find more of you, where can they find you?
You can find me over on entertainmenttalk.org or your favourite podcast platforms by searching with the same name. A few big episodes I did recently, those of you that know me, obviously I love Toy Story very, very much. I had my first ever interview, what was it, 2 weeks ago? Time flies. Very, very recently, I got the chance to interview Angus McLean, who's the director of Lightyear, which is the prequel spin-off backstory kind of thing for Buzz Lightyear. So that was kind of surreal to actually speak to a real director of a real Toy Story film. It was only 30 minutes, but it was a very precious 30 minutes. So I was very, very happy to do that. That was awesome to do. An episode I kind of forgot to mention before, one that I dropped last month, which was me giving a kind of a personal thank you to Love, Victor, because it had been a year since I'd come out, and it was me kind of talking about how the show massively helped me with all that, and talking about, you know, that was after I finished the show, so the third season had come out and all that, so that was really good. Me and David, hopefully tomorrow, will be doing a preview podcast for the last bunch of episodes for The Walking Dead. As we just mentioned, that's back next week. Seen very little promotion from AMC for that, oddly, so I'm going to have to look again at some trailers and things like that. So that's coming back next week. Did a full breakdown, and when I say full breakdown, I mean about 40 minutes worth of the Last of Us TV show trailer. Obviously, the trailer came out yesterday on HBO on YouTube. So did a long breakdown for that. I will be at some point, I don't know when, I'll be reviewing the part one game when I get around to doing that. So yeah, TV, games, films, Man United podcast, Man United are back this weekend as well. Manchester Derby, big game on Sunday. Look out for that. Still been doing Gaming Talk podcast. So yeah, we're getting into that busy period again. So lots of things are going to be happening. Twitch, I have a schedule sort of now, which is Wednesdays and Fridays from 8. That's eTalk UK over on Twitch. And if you miss any of the gameplay stuff, the gameplay clips as well, Entertainment Talk plays over on YouTube. So lots of stuff going on at the moment. So keep your eyes out for all of that. But that's me.
Yep. So go and check Matt out over on entertainmenttalk.org. For other people involved in the show, you can find Bex over on twitch.tv/Trista Bytes. That's B-Y-T-E-S. I think she's doing Little Nightmares at the moment, or Little Nightmares 2 she's running through, although she started off the stream yesterday by giving herself nightmares by reading out the reviews of the hotel she's staying at in Blackpool when she's going up to do Play Expo, which are really quite scary. There's lots of one-star reviews, but which was very, very funny. So lots of fun and games going on over there. But Little Nightmares she's doing, and sitting in a box streams and all that sort of other crazy, silly stuff over there. So twitch.tv/TristaBytes if you want to go and check out Bex. And Daryl, you can go and find at HollywoodNorthNews.net for all those TV shows that you love that are shot in Canada. For us, you can visit the website at geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see all the latest air date information. If you want to get in touch with your questions or comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram @geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.